To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. This is Aaron Carnes, the host of this podcast. After 4.5 years of weekly episodes, we are ready to stop creating In Defense of Ska. The podcast was meant to be a promotional push for my book In Defense of Ska, and it wound up taking on a life of its own. While Adam and I both love what we've accomplished with this podcast, we both feel compelled to focus our creative output elsewhere. The episodes we recorded remain evergreen, and we invite you to explore our back catalog, which will remain online thanks to the Consequence Podcast Network. I am working diligently on a new book, a novel called Little Black Book of Death. It's not ska-related, but it has a strong musical component. I also have a punk-themed script in the works. Adam is working on new music for Omnigon. We invite you to follow our respective projects and look forward to what the future holds. To keep in touch with my writing, follow me on Substack. That's aaroncarnes.substack.com. You can follow Omnigon on their social media accounts. Thank you.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to In Defense of Ska. We aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of the music. Ska deserves the respect genres like punk, hip-hop, and hardcore find among their listeners. And sometimes we learn the bands that come from two different worlds are the coolest. Our host is renowned music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska, Aaron Carnes.
Today we talk to a great current traditional ska band from Los Angeles called Steady 45s. The group formed in 2012. Most of the members grew up in the Latino ska core scene in Los Angeles. They spent their formative years moshing and skanking in backyard party shows. But as the members got a little older, they took an interest in traditional Jamaican ska. When they formed, they had a mission to master that traditional Jamaican backbeat. And indeed they did. Not only are Steady 45s one of the best current groups playing authentic ska, but they are often called upon to back Jamaican legends when they perform in Los Angeles. They can play these classic ska, rocksteady, and reggae songs exactly like they were played on the original records. Today we speak to five members of the group about their new record, Swing and Sway, Don't Be Late, how they mix elements of Jamaican ska with Chicano soul, and we learn how their punk roots inform their approach to being a band. The group is playing their vinyl release show for their new record on April 6th in Santa Ana. They'll also be touring throughout Europe later in the month. And now joining me is my co-host, veteran ska musician Adam Davis of Link 80 and Omnigon.
Okay, so there's a lot of, you know, stigma about ska. And people, you know, out there, ska haters will say things like, ska's dork music, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine a world where anybody would think that the Steady 45s are dorks. This is cool looking band, cool music.
Yeah, I mean, really, they're the antithesis of dorks.
Yeah.
So what we need is we need them to go on tour a lot more and to show more people how cool ska bands are.
Yeah, I like that.
But, you know, something I really like about the band is that they managed to both represent authentic Jamaican ska from the 60s, but also putting their own stamp on it and really showcasing their culture from Los Angeles, being Latinos in California. Like, all of that comes through in the music.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been kind of enamored with the, you know, the backyard scene as far as shows go. Mm-hmm. And the idea of it not just being like crusty punk bands back there, that some people are back there doing some stuff with some style, that's really appealing to me.
Yeah. And, you know, from my point of view, and all, and our guest Deals Olan from Mexico had made this point as well, LA's kind of a fractured scene to some degree. So I've seen there be a pretty strong traditional ska scene in LA and also really strong Latino, primarily ska core scene. But Study 45s exist in both of these worlds and they thrive in both.
Yeah. The more that these different scenes can come together, coexist and support one another, the better we'll all be and the stronger ska will get.
All right. We have Study 45s with us. So why don't you guys each say your name and instrument real quick.
What's up? I'm Joe Nieves. I play rhythm guitar, sing, and have a good time as much as I can.
I'll go next. Ian. I'm Ian. I play sax, sing as well.
Hi, I'm Jackie Mendez, and I sing.
Hi, my name is Eric, and I play bass, and I sing as well.
What's up, everybody? My name is Andre Cruz. I sing vocals with Steady 45s, and I play percussion whenever they let me.
Oh, nice. All right. I want to talk about, you know, the new record and new stuff you got going on. But first, I want to just dig up a little bit of Steady 45's lore. Our mutual friend Esteban Flores asked me if I would ask you about Junkies Running Dry. Can you tell me about Junkies Running Dry?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Esteban had a birthday party, and he asked us to kind of put together sort of a group just to do a tribute to Operation Ivy. So it was a lot of the Steady 45s. Well, it was all the 45s, and we just did kind of an impromptu set for his birthday party, La Cita, in Los Angeles. And it was fun because we all grew up on that music, and we had a fantastic time, and we celebrated big that night, and we hope to do it again. I think a lot of people wanted us to do it again.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you guys are, you know, as good as a band can be playing traditional ska and rocksteady. It warms my heart to hear that you guys were doing an Operation Ivy set. So you guys go back with Operation Ivy pretty far?
I think, yeah, a lot of us punk rock, like we all started doing punk rock in high school. And so it's a big influence, definitely.
Yeah, basically prior to this band, I was touring in punk bands for a good while. And yeah, about 90% of us are like, we were punk rockers in high school that eventually fell in love with traditional ska. You know, once you find like Toots and the Maytals and Skatalites, it kind of opens a whole door. So the Operation Ivy was actually really, really fun. It was for Esteban strictly for his birthday. And it was just nice to play some of those songs. And we all switched up. I was like singing. Crucial was on guitar. Remember Q on the bass. And it was fun time.
I've covered Operation Ivy songs before with a group. I want to hear y'all's approach to it. Because y'all are a tight band. Steady 45s are a tight band. Operation Ivy is kind of loose. Do you guys play it how Steady 45s would play it, like hella tight? Or do you play it to try to match how it sounds on the recordings?
It was definitely loose for sure. We were just having fun. There was a little bit of drinking involved, a little celebrating. It was
a little.
It was punk rock.
A little.
For sure.
Surprised you guys brought that up too, because that was so long ago. I almost kind of forgot about that.
there is a couple of videos on YouTube of us doing a couple of songs. I think I posted like a montage clip of several songs we did. So
hell yeah,
take a look for it on YouTube. It's Junkies Running Dry, La Cita. You'll see it there.
One cool thing too, there is a random clip I saw. So one time on tour, we played at Gilman Street very early on. And we did sneak in an Op Ivy song and played it just, you know, like, I think we did Sound System, right? At Gilman?
I think it was Sound System, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you kind of got to. I've seen so many bands either cover Op Ivy or Green Day.
Yeah.
Those are the big ones that get hit there.
Definitely.
You mentioned that there was some drinking going on that night. How much would you, if you had to guess, that Esteban had to drink?
It was Esteban's birthday, and I did remember like a bottle being poured into his mouth sometime. I think we all saved ourselves because we had like, you know, we had to do like a 45-minute set trying to remember like all these songs. And I mean, we grew up on these songs, but just to kind of get them tight. I mean, I think Joe had probably the bulk of the song, the load, because he had to remember all the lyrics. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I know that was a tough one. Yeah.
You think you know those songs until you're singing them.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're fast. Those lyrics come at you fast.
I mean, he's literally a rapper is what he is. He's not a singer. So many lyrics. And seems like the lyrics don't actually necessarily always fit, but he just kind of makes them fit yeah. in the song. You know what I mean? So I was like, it was a crazy fun show.
I was looking at the lyrics for Yelling in My Ear the other day, just the first verse. It's like, it's all like just jammed in there.
Has Esteban played in Steady 45s at any point?
Absolutely, for sure. He was, okay, when the Steady 45s first started, we actually didn't have a piano or a keyboard player. I kind of snuck him into the band. We had a show and sent him a little bit of set, and he just kind of showed up. It was a show in Riverside, I believe. But basically, he kind of set the standard. Once we jammed with him, it was like just like a complete sound. And do you remember how long ago that was, Eric? I know it was a show with Debonairs in Riverside, but it must have been like seven.
That was probably 2017. Does that seem right? 2016? Yeah, he was with us for a couple of years. He kind of came from the ska core scene. Mm-hmm. So doing the traditional stuff, we kind of molded him a little bit to try to play more of the traditional style. And now he's got that style down for sure. We all kind of molded each other, you know, when I joined the group also, you know, trying to adapt to the new style, not playing with my thumb. And we all kind of were just really dissecting like a lot of the old Jamaican tunes and trying to like mimic and emulate that sound the best that we could.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like backing up a lot of the Jamaican artists. That's kind of how we learned to master the style down. You know, there's just nothing like that earlier on. Backing up like the Clarendonians, I think that was our first big backing set, and you just learn so much for that because this style is it's not just about knowing chords and songs. It's actually like a big feel kind of thing, and it takes a lot. A lot has to go right to kind of project it in the traditional sense, you know. So
it's a pretty fine balance to play traditional like Jamaican ska and rock steady, because it does have to be tight, but it has to groove and it has to kind of feel a little rickety too. So you can't just play it like a machine and then it won't sound right.
Yeah, like drum machines and BPMs, that's all like can't really pull it off there. You're right. You know, you listen to a lot of the early Scatolite stuff, and there's like a lot of mistakes and little kind of hiccups and kind of stuff. And I think it just adds a little personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I noticed Esteban uploaded a TikTok a little while ago where he was playing keyboards to Anywhere But Here. And he said that was his favorite Steady 45 song. Have you ever seen that little video?
I haven't. No, he has a TikTok. He hasn't told me about it. We're at that weird age where, like, you know, we're trying to keep up with, you know, how fast the social media stuff, like, you know, I think we have a TikTok page open, but I don't think we understand how it kind of functions. So I'm learning that. So I don't know. I'm going to check out TikTok. Yeah. Is he popular on there?
He's popular with me.
Do any of you guys have TikToks, the band?
Jackie, do you have a TikTok?
I do, but I don't really use it that much. I'm like mostly on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys, let's talk a little bit about what's kind of going on now. You released a Swing and Sway to streaming services like a year and a half ago, I think.
Yeah, I'll kind of break that down. So we released, it's pretty much a concept album. And the concept behind it is we're releasing the vinyl and it's coming out. We just got the test press maybe a couple weeks ago. We should have that first week of April keeping our fingers crossed on that. But yeah, we released it as far as two collections. Swing and Sway is the ska side of the record. And it's really just, you know, paying tribute to, you know, 1960s Jamaican ska. And then the B side of the record is all of rock steady, like an early reggae, like 68, 69. And so it's actually a two-part album that we released online, Swing and Sway being the ska side, and then Don't Be Late being the rock steady side. Mm. And now when the vinyl comes out, it's going to be, it's pretty much broken down in those two collections. The A side, ska, and the B side will be all rock steady and early reggae. And the album is actually going to be like a gatefold album where it opens up. And the covers are going to be on the backsides, and the insides is going to kind of detail each side of the record. It's going to be a very unique production. And we're really proud of that. We can't wait to share that. So I want to say, like, first week of April, we'll have that full length on vinyl, on 12-inch. And we're taking that to Europe. We'll have, like, a pre-sale. And we'll also do a string of dates kind of pushing that record in Los Angeles, as well as, like, our European tour.
And then are you putting that out on a label, or are you self-releasing that?
We're self-releasing. I run a label called Blackbird Records, and we're releasing it on our own. I'm also releasing a record with Jackie in summer. We're working on a full length as well. So it's, yeah, we're just doing all this independently, self-produced. We record in their studio, and we wrote all the songs. There's a couple covers on there that we do kind of our own style to it, which are really unique. I'm so proud, Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions tune, and a Sammy Smokey Robinson tune. But a lot of those songs are all just written by all the members of the band. Like, we have, like, almost every member in the band writes songs. Ian writes songs, Joe, Alfredo Barrios, who's not here, he wrote three of the songs, a beautiful instrumentals. I wrote a couple songs. So it's a really a collective album that we all really just poured our heart into. So you get a lot of different flavors and different sounds and different characters kind of writing different songs. So it's a very unique album in that sense.
Hell yeah.
And the whole reason it kind of took so long to press was, so we had to make a big decision around COVID, coming out of COVID time. Some of the record plants had a real crazy wait list, like a year and a half. And we had a real conversation about, you know, should we hold on and, like, not release this? But we had been already holding on to it. So, like, you know what? Let's drop it online. Whoever's going to buy it, it's going to buy it. Let's kind of get it out there. So that's the reason behind the whole, why is it coming out on vinyl a year later? It was a big wait list. Now everything's back to normal. So, you know, we have Europe coming up, Supernova, Sierra Nevada. So it's like, yeah, now's a good time. Let's get that pressed.
Are you doing a local vinyl release show on April 6th in Santa Ana?
Yes. So, you know, it's kind of crazy for us starting off because, you know, when we were first starting, you know, Hefcat, Agrolites, they were like a big thing. And it's so cool that we're like friends with those guys now and everything. So it's cool. So we're doing a record release show, and to make it special, I hit up Jesse Wagner from Agrolites, and a long time ago, I remember them doing kind of, it was half the members of Hepcat, half the members of Agrolites.
Yeah.
And so they're getting together for a special set called Agrocat. They're calling the name of the band. And it's basically just Hepcat songs and Agrolites songs. And it's really cool. So that's going to be special. And we're going to have the vinyl there available. And yeah.
What venue is it?
It's a La Santa in Santa Ana.
Okay, April 6th.
April 6th.
So I wanted to ask you, you were talking a little bit about how the first side pays tribute to ska, and the second side pays tribute to kind of rocksteady.
Correct.
Is that different in any way than sort of your entire catalog that you've been doing this music? Is there some kind of little bit, a different approach that you put to these songs?
I think the concept behind it is that, you know, a lot of us are big collectors of records and playing, you know, a record from top, you know, from the whole side and having an experience of listening to the record. So we wanted to kind of give the listener that kind of experience of enjoying, like, kind of like how we started playing ska music and doing that tribute on one side and just listening to just the ska side of the record and then flipping it over and then progresses to like 1968, 1969, and now we're doing rock steady. So is this more like an experience for the listener to kind of like watch the band kind of like go through that journey of like Jamaican music. So that was sort of the idea behind that.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Usually in the past, you know, we've kind of done rocksteady and ska and, you know, mixed together in the album. But this one, we wanted to kind of just give it the listener a different experience on that.
So Andre, you're the newest member. Are you on this record?
Well, I'm not. Right? I'm not.
No, not yet. We have some songs with Andre coming out, but this is recorded just prior before he joined us. So,
in fact, I remember hearing some of these songs in the early days of me coming around, and Joe showing me some of the demos, and I was just elated. And I was just so stoked. And I remember even at least one of the songs, Be Like Water. I was like, yo, man, you got to let me in on this. And you're like, it's done. Damn it.
So. Yeah. So even though he wasn't on that LP, he's now like, it's so much more fuller. He's performing live. He sings a lot of the new songs with us. So adds another flavor.
And Andre, you have your own music as well, right?
I do. So I am actually up in the Bay Area. And then anytime we need to come down to rehearse, anytime we have a show, anything like that, I'll come on down. I'm from Los Angeles originally. So working with these dudes is, I mean, literally like coming home for me, you know. Mm-hmm. But up in the Bay, I work with my boy Chris Lujan, and the band is called Andre Cruz and Chris Lujan. And that is just like old school soul music. And it's a lot of fun to work with. And it's really cool to be able to be in that soul world, you know, and just be playing all this music that is, you know, that you're going to bump on your lowrider, that you're going to want to listen to at that chill cookout. And then I get to come down to the 45s. And I mean, even the rehearsals are a party, you know. It's just, I feel real lucky to be a part of both these worlds. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Jackie, so you play with the band and you have your own music as well, right?
Yes. So I don't play in the band, but I am working with them right now because we are touring together. So they're basically my backing band.
Oh, gotcha.
For the tour. So this is the first time that I actually like have all of them as a backing band. Eric plays with me outside of the band. So he's kind of leading the way as far as us, you know, making it work and getting together and learning the song. So from here on out, they're going to be backing me, which is super exciting. Mm-hmm. But I do have my own stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I saw your name listed on the European tour dates.
Yeah. Luckily they invited me to tag along. So I get to join them and, you know, it works out. I mean, we're all friends and we've done plenty of shows together. Me and Eric work together a lot as far as also I record with him under Blackbird Records. So I want to say, the last few releases have been under Blackbird, and we're also working on a full length. So yeah, I'm pretty busy with just recording new music right now, which is super exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I often see, it seems like, yeah, there's a lot of overlap with your world and theirs. Like when I was seeing clips of the Stranger Cole concert that you guys backed, I saw you on stage as well. Jackie, I don't know if you were on stage the whole set or part of the set.
I actually did backups for some songs that they needed it, and then as far as Patsy Todd's parts, I had the honor of doing those parts with Stranger and Derek Morgan. So they're like, oh, you could do, you know, some backups with us. So I would do backups, and then when I had my moment, I would go up and sing with them the duets. So that was really amazing. Yeah,
I think the clip that I remember seeing was Bangarang, and it just looked so fun and so great.
A lot of fun.
Oh yeah. It was a party on stage, honestly. We were all just having the best time.
Yeah.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
Now, what is something like, I know you've backed up several artists at this point, but like, let's say for that gig, for instance, Stranger Cole, what is the process? Are you guys working on this like months in advance? Are you communicating with him to get a set list? Or is it like knowing a lot more songs than you might potentially have to play.
So should we give the professional version of this answer? Or
what's the unprofessional version?
No, because there's definitely some scenarios where we have some time to over-prepare. Ian, if you can cover some of this question, but generally speaking, this is how it works. You know, we get the date in advance. They'll send the set. You know, these guys are a lot older, so oftentimes they're not on computers. So many times we've gotten a whole set. We learn all the songs. They show up that day. Not even half those songs are the songs we're playing. So we have about 15 minutes to relearn, like all this, to change all the keys and all that stuff. And Ian, how would you say our preparation is for that and the process?
I mean, like you said, we wait to get a set, and we work to the best of the ability that we can to get that ready. And, you know, a lot of times we'll have a couple of tunes from that artist that weren't included in the set. So we'll learn them kind of sneakily as a band. And as they show up, maybe we'll either be playing them during a break or as they walk into the room and they get excited and we're able to sneak in some of our favorite tunes into the set as well that way.
Yeah. How faithful to the recordings are you guys? Nitpicky to get like every little detail of the recording, or do you get the spirit of the recording? I'm curious your approach.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we definitely dissect it, especially on the horn side. You know, there's sometimes that we, as an inside thing, like to like replicate some of the like flubs and stuff that you'll hear on the solos in the recording. Like, we'll just do that for ourselves, and me and Fredo will like look at each other, you know, have a little laugh about it. But yeah, no, we deeply love the recordings and try and get every little detail of those into the performance for sure. And I think people that come and see us and that really have the same love will kind of notice those little things too.
Yeah, I think some of one of the Jamaican artists, I'm trying to remember who it was, but we were backing, and it was Ken Booth. No, but I remember like they were walking into the studio and they were listening to this jam, you know. And then when he walked in, he saw a bunch of like Latinos like playing this music, you know. He's like, I thought there was going to be some like Black or Jamaican people, because we sounded so authentic to them. They were surprised that it was this bunch of Latinos really carrying this torch, this Jamaican torch. So I think that was a big like compliment to us.
That was Rudy Mills.
We did
Rudy Mills and Keith and Tex, the London International Ska Festival. And so we had a little bit of time to practice in London, and he walks into the studio. That was that. I remember that too.
So this thing that you're involved with, this is like the person behind this is really Junior Francis, right? A Ska Mania and Eric, but Junior, like primarily in terms of like having done this since I think even the 90s before you guys were doing it.
Junior has a very important role on why the Jamaican oldies or traditional ska scene in Los Angeles is so fruitful. There is other people that have been involved over the years, like Steady Beat, Luis from Steady Beat. I know Chris Murray was doing the Blue Beat Lounge. A lot has happened. It's been a lot of contribution for musicians and DJs. But Junior Francis, who is from Jamaica, moved to the East Coast and then made his way down to the West Coast. Basically, since, have you guys done an interview with him?
Not on the podcast, but I interviewed Junior for the second edition of my book, and I've talked to those guys, and he's interviewed me before.
It's really quite amazing. Like, Junior Francis is a very special person. And like, you know, in this scene, no matter where we go, you have to understand, anybody in this like niche scene, it's all about the love and appreciation for the music. Rarely, I mean, let's just be honest, nobody's making tons of money off of this at all, you know? So it's all out of love. And like, the sacrifices Junior has made, I've seen him sweating, you know, like for the show, instead of taking a gamble, you know, he's got to cover flights, rooms, and how's he going to make it back? And we're just super lucky in Los Angeles that we have a lot of people to support. But he has so much to do with why Jamaican music is so popular in Southern California. And I would give him a ton of credit for that. And even with us, you know, he's got a lot of love for our band, and it's given us a lot of opportunities. And we work together with a lot of stuff, bounce ideas off each other. We've been involved in a lot of the Ska Mania events. We don't play all of them, but he always will give us a ring. Hey, you know, are you guys in town doing this? And we'll try to make it work as much as we can.
Yeah, so there was like a lot of different iterations of the backing band that he was booking, you know, especially before you guys formed. And I know like the Agrolites members were definitely involved with that. But one of the things he told me that I found was really interesting was that a lot of these artists were coming to LA before he was booking them, but they were getting backed by reggae bands. And, you know, once he started to put ska bands or the, you know, people from ska bands as their backing band, it was totally different because these were people that cared about the original records. Like the reggae bands were just like playing them, but the ska fans were like, I'm going to study these records. I'm going to replicate them exactly because I love them so much. And it was a totally different experience.
So the other side of that is as a promoter, Junior played a role, but I mean, we have to give tons of credit to the bands that came before us. And what really changed the game, yes, Agrolites were doing backing stuff. And who's another big one?
The Expanders
were another big one. And then there was other groups of musicians like C-Spot, Mobtown, Hepcat, all the early bands that started that. But those backing sets definitely started to elevate. I mean, for us, you know, we're on the younger side, we're, you know, like the newest generation of that concept. But I mean, the stories from the 90s scene, you know, is really quite amazing. And I've seen some killer footage. Like I was on tour with Agrolites and Jesse and I were watching them backing Derek Morgan at Sierra Nevada. Like, I don't remember what year, it's on YouTube. And, you know, just sharing stories and, you know, just appreciating it. And then we started to watch Ethiopian singer, Crucial. Expanders did Ethiopian's lead singer.
Oh yeah, I think it was a couple of Ethiopians. Yeah.
Oh man, these sets are amazing. Just a moment in time. So yeah, a combination of Junior Francis and all those musicians before us, it was definitely a big setup.
Yeah.
And you know, it happens on the East Coast as well. I know they take artists out there too, but primarily, you know, we're involved with the Los Angeles scene. So a lot had to happen to get to the point we're at today, and we're lucky to send off a lot of these Jamaican guys, you know, into the heavens, unfortunately. You know, this last year we backed up the Clarendonians at Sierra Nevada, and not too long after, you know, Peter Austin passed away. And so that reality is kind of setting in too. It's sure. Like a lot of these are kind of on the last, you know, the last whim.
Yeah, we did the same thing with even Pat Kelly. We had two dates with him, and one in San Diego and Los Angeles. And you know, he was just so happy to play and perform for, you know, like just diehard fans here in Los Angeles. And but yeah, he just wasn't like in the best shape, and like, but everybody was just so happy to see him perform. And then shortly after, we lost Pat Kelly as well. So it's kind of a sad thing that, you know, their last performances have been with us, but it's also been an honor for us that, you know, maybe we're the last musical experience that they had of their lives, you know, performing for an audience.
I mean, I can't think of a better way to send somebody off.
Yeah. No, it's definitely an honor. We're all sad. I mean, I remember I got the news about Peter Austin, and it's just, you know, it just feels like you lost a family member, because we feel like we know them so well because we've studied their music, we've listened to their music for years, and it feels like you lose like a family member. It's kind of heartbreaking, but it's a special moment that we all can carry with us for the rest of our musical career, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, unfortunately, like that doesn't really happen up here in Northern California, because there's just not a person to put that up. But we got to see Supernova last year. We got to see Stranger Cole, not backed by you guys, but, you know, nonetheless, the energy that he had and just the spirit he had playing was just awesome. I mean, he exists in this plane where you're not like, oh, this guy's been doing this for whatever, you know, decades and decades of clients. He's just in the moment, and it's just magical.
It's crazy because we backed Derek Morgan in Sierra Nevada, and you know, he's pretty much wheelchair bound, but there was a point in the show where, like, I guess he was just feeling it. So he literally like got up off his chair, and he was doing like this wiggle in his chair, and it was just like the crowd went crazy. So we're just like, man, like even Derek Morgan, you know, just to get up off of his seat and kind of wiggle around, like it just got everyone all wild. But yeah, even we backed the Pioneers recently also. Those guys are full of life and energy, and we're going to get to back them as well at Supernova coming up in September, and then also Sierra Nevada as well.
What? So, Joe, when did you say your very first time doing this was?
So the first backing set we did, I can't remember the year now. I don't have my things, but it was the Clarendonians. It was the Clarendonians was the first backing set we did. Yeah.
I think it was like 2015.
2015.
Okay. Around there-ish. Yeah.
Same year that we went on tour, Jackie, to Europe. Was that 2015?
I think it was.
The first time. We're bad with dates, man. We gotta have a calendar.
it's been about 7 or 8 years, something like that, somewhere around that range.
Yeah. Cool. So I want to go back a little bit and kind of talk about the history of formation. You guys had touched upon this fact that you were from the punk scene. You guys were punk rockers, and you got into ska. So Steady 45s begins in 2012, as I understand it. And initially, you guys are doing covers, or are you guys doing originals also at that point?
I'll let Ian take most of this question because I joined the latter part. It was a different band name, and it was a tribute to Jamaican ska. Ian, if you want to talk about even like Vinyl Souls, like,
yeah, we were. I was in a kind of like a third wave ska band with Fritz, the drummer.
What was that band called?
That was called Gonzo the Great. so we were doing that. I was playing that right out of high school. That kind of ended, and Fritz had brought me to a rehearsal. He had answered a Craigslist posting from Mickey Wilson, who's our original bass player, playing stand-up bass, right? And so we were getting together and learning like early Wailers tunes, Justin Hines, you know, we were doing that. And then eventually Joe got brought into the fold, and we started pushing to write more originals and to kind of adapt the style and to try to put our own spin on it, as well as trying to keep it as traditional as possible. And throughout the years, just different members have been in and out, and we've kind of ended up where we are now with the solid crew that we have now that have just been pushing on, you know, focusing on originals and progressing the music.
Yeah, basically started off as a cover band, for the lack of a better word. And it was really cool, like the set list that they had kind of compiled. You know, when I joined, it was a different band name. The band was called, I think, Vinyl Soul, and it was just all covers. And like immediately I was like, this is so cool. Like this, you know, I was a big Hepcat fan. So I was like, man, there's like not a whole lot of this going on. I was like, it'd be cool, like, how you guys feel about, you know, playing some originals, maybe, you know. And we changed the band name officially in that year, toward the end of 2012, like December. And then we started writing right away. And actually the first original song is the song that you sing, Andre. One Day is actually the first original song. We haven't released it yet. We're barely gonna release it and debut it. And that's kind of why I wanted to push that song.
This is your first song, original song you wrote as the Steady 45s, and you're just now releasing it?
Yeah, it's. I don't want to talk too much about it yet, but it hasn't came out. Yeah, yeah. I recorded a really early version of it, but I had certain vision, and Andre's, that's the song you're singing, Andre, a little backstory on that.
Yeah, I knew it was an older song. I didn't know it was one of the first. That, I mean, and I can't wait for y'all to hear the song, because it's incredible. It's just so much fun. But I mean, I'm even more honored now. Thanks for letting me do my thing on the song.
Absolutely.
So this is something I'm kind of curious about. LA has a great ska scene. It seems to me like there's a pretty strong traditional ska scene in LA, and there's a very strong like East LA Latino ska scene. It doesn't seem like there's a ton of overlap, but you guys overlap in that scene. Is my perception correct when I say that?
You know, early on, we were very big. So there's a big ska core scene. You know, the traditional scene has ups and downs. Primarily, it's like older people. Now, here's what the kind of funneling. There's this, a lot of the younger kids were into ska core. Eventually, those kids would grow up and, you know, you start to mellow out. Like slower music and things like that. And then whoever was those ska core kids, as they get older, were starting to get into traditional ska. So early on, we invested a lot of time playing those like all ages events and, you know, festivals. And what would happen, it was just kind of a little bit of a cycle. It's like these young kids going to ska core, and, you know, them becoming 18, 21, Because here's a little known fact too. A lot of the traditional ska shows are not all ages. It's very rare. We do have some shows, like I think one got announced, but it's not too often that that happens. So like the Ska Mania events are very commonly 21 and over. I'm not sure if that covers like the answer to your question, but that overlap is because it's so weird because it is totally different demographics. Like if we play an event like Skaland or one of those events, it's a lot of different people that would say show up to the Study 45s and Pioneers, you know, at the Glass House or Los Globos or stuff like that. Like, and it's you know, LA is a weird scene. There's a lot of subcultures and subgenres. But we are one of the lucky ones. I feel like you too, Jackie. Like we have like our crowds are very diverse. We have a little bit of, you know, the ska core kids, ska core scenes. And then Jackie also, like, you have a lot of the soul scenes that start to come out to us as well, right?
Yeah, I think doing the festivals is a big one that kind of, I guess, put us out there on the map as far as that style. And it's cool because you do have those younger kids that might not be familiar with what we're doing or the style we're doing. So then you kind of get like a new little following. So I think that's kind of like why the crowds get, you know, mixed up and your demographic changes, because you're just playing either like Ska Wars or something where you have, and it's cool because I feel like they started mixing it up. Like they would have their ska core bands and then traditional. So I think that has a lot to do with kind of us blending in. As far as that, I also had a band before I did my solo stuff. They were called the Boss Beats, and we were more like upbeat. Like we would touch on a little bit of everything. So I've kind of been in the backyard scene too. So I feel like people know me from that also. And then, you know, it's a trip that some people still like have gone all these years following, like, I guess my musical journey. And now they like are into the stuff I'm doing now. So I think it has a lot to do with just my background too, of playing like that backyard scene and just being in that, you know, that era of the time.
For context for people listening, can you explain just real briefly what the backyard and the Allen Theater scene is?
I think for me, it started, yeah, like in the San Gabriel Valley where I grew up. I grew up in El Monte. So a lot of the cities like La Puente, Baldwin Park, we would all kind of get together and find bands, and we would throw our own shows because, you know, in our area, at least, there's not really any, there wasn't a lot of venues to choose from at the time. And sometimes it was like one of those things where you had to, like, you know, sell tickets and to be able to play like venues. So I think it was just more fun for us too, to just say, all right, there's this person we know with a huge backyard. Let's get our homies that play in other bands and let's just throw a show. And we would make flyers, pass them out. So that was kind of the scene that I started in, and just, you know, being able to, like, you know, be independent, throw our own shows, all ages. And that's kind of where it all started.
And these are like punk, ska core.
So basically it was a little bit everything, even metal was involved. Early 2000s was a big time for that. And the way it worked is there was a couple different hubs, because I mean, I don't know if you did, Kusho, but I definitely started off backyard scenes, and some of the bigger scenes were like El Monte, Wilmington, and South Central. That's where you would find the majority of the backyard shows, and they would be anything. It could be punk, ska, metal, grindcore.
Yeah, it was always mixed up. It was always mixed up, and there was never like organization either. It was always just like show up and we're ready to go, or maybe we won't play because the freaking cops came. It was wild, but those were like the best times, honestly. Humble beginning.
Like, how many people would you say would be at like your average backyard show?
Oh, that could vary. Anywhere from like 50 to 300 people, you know what I mean? Just depends how big the backyard was, honestly.
300 people in a backyard is wild.
I've seen it. Yeah. I used to do shows in East LA a lot, kind of touching on East LA, and I went to a lot of shows out there and saw a lot of the cool bands. I remember seeing Union 13 for the first time in our backyard in East LA, and like, you know, they played till the cops showed up, you know what I mean? But those are fun times. I mean, I feel like a lot of us got kind of our start in the backyard scene. Mm-hmm. And kind of touching on your question about like how like the scenes kind of overlap, you know, a lot of us started the punk scene,
Daddy doing now, more traditional music, more of the ska rock steady. And now a lot of us are playing soul music. I play in a soul band. Jackie does a lot of soul music. And it's crazy because, like, I think a lot of people that you would see at the ska scene, now you'll see them at the soul scene. And now people that are in the soul scene, you'll now see in the ska scene. So, like, I think at the end of the day, a lot of it is soul music, you know, the music that we're doing. So, and, you know, the younger generation's catching on to that. You know, they're catching on to, like, now what we're doing. And, you know, they still like the ska core, but, like, hey, like, this you know, traditional, more like Jamaican 1960s era. And now, like, a lot of the oldies and soulies we're doing, you were going to see a lot of the same people at these same gigs, you know, even people that weren't into the music now are like, hey, this is kind of cool. Like, you know, Elton Ellis does, you know, this like oldies song, you know, like, so we're a lot of the scenes are kind of mixing together now a lot, you know, we all run into each other at different shows. And there's a big like vinyl community in Los Angeles as well, where there's just a lot of us spin records. We're not like for sure like DJs, but we just like to spin records and listen to music. And it could be anything. It could be anything from like cumbia to like, you know, reggae or soul or, you know, whatever it is, Motown stuff. So it's a little bit of that. It's like just lovers of music all kind of sharing, you know, the same space, you know. So I think it's kind of cool to see how everything's kind of progressed and that we're all still, you know, loving the music, even though it's changed a little bit, I think.
Right back after this.
I have a quick question for whoever wants to answer this. You guys are obviously highly influenced by and very well studied in Jamaican ska and rocksteady, but there's also this element of Chicano soul, I think, that is kind of an ingredient in the mixture. Could you kind of touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I was mentioning, now a lot of us are doing soul music. Jackie's put out a few soul songs, songs like she's written, and also songs that were produced under covers. On Blackbird, we release soul music as well, like it's anything like 1960s, 1970s soul, some of that Philly sound, some of the sounds from like Detroit. And so we're like, yeah, all of us grew up kind of on oldies, you know, listening to Kara's 101. And so that's always like a major influence. And especially now we wouldn't do the Jamaican oldies. We're kind of taking that element, some of that influence from just growing up listening to that music, you know, kind of growing up as a kid listening to oldies and soulies by with our parents, and even a lot of Spanish music, and then kind of growing up and finding the angst and starting into punk rock. And now it's been a long journey, but we all go back to the basics, you know. Oldies music, soulies music is really what kind of, you know, set the tone of like, hey, I want to play music, I want to be in a band, I want to be with other musicians and sing songs and sing harmonies and sing love songs and, you know, conscious music as well. So I think it all kind of boils down to that.
When you say oldies and you talk about the music your parents listen to, could you throw some names out there for people who are maybe kind of curious about this ingredient?
I would say it has a lot to do with just growing up in LA, you know, and the culture. Just kind of like to complete this. I don't know if we do it like intentionally. I think it's just like in our blood, like when we like write music, because we have so much love for different genres, especially soul. I think we kind of just, it has its own flavor. At least I feel like that about my music too. So, you know, you listen and, you know, stuff like Mary Wiles or like the Stylistics or, you know, the Delfonics, like all those like classic bands that you would hear, you know, bumping like on the radio and also just in the neighborhood. So I feel like a lot of that has influence as far as, you know, what we play. It's the list goes on. Like, honestly, like I'm trying to like kind of think of different artists. There's just so many, but just to like name a few, Billy Stewart,
The Temptations, the Impressions. Smokey,
Sam Cooke
for sure. The list goes on.
I think all of us here grew up like with soul music being connected to family gatherings or just good times, or even just not even like an official family gathering, but like it's a Sunday and one of your uncles has some asada and everybody goes to the house and there's music and barbecuing and little cousins running around and, you know. So for me, especially my two uncles, you know, grew up playing music in the 70s in East LA. And so they would always be at family parties with guitars, singing harmonies. And so all the names they just mentioned, and then some, right? Like El Chicano, Smokey, all these harmony Brian groups. Wood. And yeah, all that we grew up hearing. And so it's just ingrained in the DNA, I think. And I think that, for myself at least, is like something that made Rocksteady and early ska and blue beat and all that makes sense, because when you're really listening, you'll find so many Jamaican versions of Curtis Mayfield songs or Smokey songs or different soul songs. Like, the more you dig, this has been kind of like a personal little like passion project of mine that I want to get together, is to like put together a database of like the old, like original, like soul tunes, and then like all the Jamaican versions, because the list is endless. I'm still finding them to this day.
Yeah,
the amount of recordings, Jamaican recordings from these eras that are basically just a few years each, you know, ska, rocksteady. There's an insane amount of them. Like, too much for any one person.
So that's kind of where the soul bleeds in for us. This is just part of the DNA of growing up in the area that we did with you know the families that we did. And it comes full circle when we see the Jamaicans doing the same thing. You know, music just bounces back and forth internationally.
Yeah. When I listen to you guys and stuff, it's like, I hear how authentic the rhythm sections are and stuff, but then I hear the way you write music and the way you put harmonies on them. And it's like, that's a flavor that's a little different than like how these songs were, you know, the old songs were written. And that's where I could really see that element in your music.
Never noticed that. We are heavily influenced by a lot of the like vocal groups from Jamaica, the Techniques, the Melodians, the Heptones. Mm-hmm. All those groups were, you know, things we just really like loved and fell in love with that styling. So a lot of our songs are like that, very, very harmony based mm-hmm. songs, and kind of building sort of a layer of that. And that's the biggest influence. And it all comes down back to like, you know, the Impressions and Temptations doing that.
Sure. Now, back to my kind of like discussion about this overlapping scene. You guys were talking about playing the backyard shows and that scene and stuff. I went to Ska Wars in 2015, and there was like, I think, 3,000 people, just to give people a sense of what this is about. There's 3,000 people. It was at a park in East LA, a couple stages. I know Delirians were there, and I feel like Steady 45s. And I think, Jackie, did you play that as well?
I think I did. Didn't we? Remember? I swear we've done like so much stuff that.
Yeah, I think it was the Plaza de la Rasta.
Yeah, that's it. Okay.
Plaza yes, de la Rasta. Yes,
yeah. Yeah, we were there. It was Delirians, 45s, Jackie, and a bunch of other, you know, Scott Corbin.
Well, that's why I remember, is because it was a very diverse festival, but Delirians, Steady 45s, Jackie, I think that covered the traditional sounds of that festival, was with the three of you. And then it was a lot of Scott Core. There was a lot of like, other variations, not necessarily like heavy, but like different versions of ska. But I didn't feel like there was anything else traditional or really calling back to the old stuff besides the three acts I mentioned.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was only a few bands doing it.
So that at that time period in your early years, I mean, was that kind of it in terms of the bands from the scene that were really like looking backwards and bringing this music forward?
I don't want to go as far as say we're the only ones. I would just say we were the most like driven in terms of willing to go out there. I mean, from my culture, like coming from the punk scene and touring and even playing like Warped Tour back in the day, that was a big thing about, you know, taking this project and going, you know, ambition is not something that's super common in a lot of bands or musicians. But I would say that Delirians, Jackie Mendez, and us around that time frame, 2012 to, you know, 2015, 16, we were probably maybe the most ambitious. There's definitely other bands that were around and that are still coming up. We're seeing now an influx of newer traditional bands, you know, and where we've been doing our part. The April 6th show, we intentionally, well, we haven't announced them, but I guess maybe this is a good one. So there's three new bands coming out. The Scufflers, they've been doing traditional music. Another band called The Elysians, Kingston Beat All-Stars. So now you're starting to see a little bit more people kind of trying and kind of getting the hang of it. Yeah. And we've been doing our part. I know, Eric, you've recorded a couple bands. I've been helping The Scufflers record as well. So now we're kind of entering the zone of of now even having a place to curate it. So we'll always, if we throw our own show, we'll try to get these newer bands kind of involved to get people to get exposed to them and you know, just regurgitate the scene that way.
Yeah. So 2016, so 2016 you put out Trouble in Paradise, and I feel like you guys were pretty active, right? You guys were touring pretty much at that point.
A lot of touring for sure. US tour, European tour, many like West Coast tours,
Mexico, Canada.
Mexico, yeah.
we did. Don't know the exact number, but it was like more than 150 shows that year in particular. We were hitting the ground running. We even played the Hollywood Bowl. I think we backed up Keith and Tex at the Hollywood Bowl. That was insane. Opening up for like the Specials and Ziggy Marley. We were extremely active for sure. Yeah. Extremely broke,
but extremely active. Yeah. And so at that time, your singer was Joey Quiñones, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So let me just talk about him real briefly, because he is currently the singer for The Sinceres, and they're pretty popular band in the Chicano soul space. He was like your primary lead singer at that point, right?
Well, we've always had a lot of singers, but he definitely, you know, he's got such a unique voice without a doubt. And we definitely had a lot of like material with him. And you know what, to be honest, like he came from the Deliriants, and the Deliriants were like the band right before us.
Mm. Yeah, there was a good amount of overlap between the Deliriants and Steady 45s in the early years, right?
100%. And you know, he always, even around that time, Ian was in his first band. I don't know if you want to talk about JQ in the review, but he was always kind of doing soul music. And this is something that we kind of knew, you know, he talked about a lot. You know, he had a lot of ambition to do soul music. So, you know, we had an amazing run with him, and we still talk with him. We did a reunion show with him. But the band is Sinceres are doing very well right now. It's good to see that. And, you know, everybody in this band or who's been involved has so many things going for them. Like I've always been a believer there's enough success in the world for everyone. And we've been so lucky to have so many amazing musicians like Joey Quiñones. Roger Rivas has played with us, Tom Cook from the Debonairs, Roy from the Expanders, John Butcher from the Expanders. You know, Andre Cruz just joined us. He has a great soul project. Eric, you know, has the Blackbird label, plays with Illusion, Jackie Mendez. So it's been a lot of people that have contributed to, you know, we've never considered ourselves like a one thing. It's just the Steady 45's primary goal has always been to just continue the flame burning of traditional Jamaican music. And that's been the primary goal. And it's taken like a village of musicians. Like we can't even, the list is pretty immense, but we're just so lucky to have so many people willing to perform with us, write with us, record with us. And, you know, every era feels like, you know, has its own little taste and spin on it.
Yeah. So, okay. The other thing that Esteban wanted me to ask you about, he said, let's ask them about the Trouble in Paradise tour. I believe it was a fairly rough tour, right?
I think he's referring to, because we were traveling in a like a bus,
yeah,
and we did have some problems on the road with the bus, and we got stuck in what city was it? Was it Salt Lake?
OKC. It was Oklahoma City.
OKC, yeah. So yeah. We had some troubles, and we had a delay on a couple of days there trying to fix the van. It was a long tour. It was like a month long tour through the U.S. And so, just like anything else, there's always going to be hiccups on the road. But that was one of the hiccups for sure. Remember being stuck there, and someone, one of the fans out there, he actually took us in for a couple of days, and we crashed his house for a couple of days while we got the van.
So this was not the only tour mishap we have. I was almost thinking about the van incident. But yeah. So our bus, the transmission went out in Oklahoma City. And there was a fan at the show, real, you know, like we're from LA. So sometimes we're really awkward around really nice people because we don't understand hospitality. You're used to just getting shit talked on and, you know, made fun of or whatever. But so every time we go like Midwest or the East Coast, everyone's like so nice. And, you know, like half the time we're like, you know, what are they up to or something. But this guy, he is the fan, real cool guy. His name's Brian, actually. Still reach out to him. But he offered us a place like to stay. And like we've codenamed that day like Dab City, because basically he invited us to his house. Really nice house, really cool like PlayStation. But he had this room and he had this massive dab machine. And he definitely dabbed us all out. And we had like you
know. I don't think all of us were the same after that.
I haven't done dabs since then, for sure.
We just never dab again.
It takes that like one scary time to make you like never want to do it again.
It was still fun. We were playing video games and stuff, but definitely for sure we got Dab City, the memory I could think of from that tour. Yeah.
What video games were you playing all dabbed up?
I remember there was like that
Rock Band.
No, it was the PlayStation, like the, you know, like the first VR versions with the sticky hold. So we were playing like disc golf and a bunch of like random stuff. I'll just say this: I think we were stuck there for 3 days. It felt like 8 hours because I'm not sure what happened. But yeah, they were feeding us, and this is the thing about the road. I've always say that you get so exposed to like what are the essential parts of life, and just amazing. You meet amazing people like that and have memories. But that tour was so fun. We went to a lot of new cities that day, did the full run. We went to like the beaches on the East Coast, Florida.
That we can write a whole book on that tour. I mean, we usually try, when we're on the road, we usually try to find like the best places to eat. So we're in Texas, we hit up like some barbecue spots. We're in Florida, we ate like some crazy wings. And like, so that's always kind of like our MO is like, let's try to find the best, like most, popular place that we have to try all these food spots. So we ate. So then we came back a little heftier just from all the heat.
Yeah. What's the best place you ate on tour?
What was that spot in Florida? The Skipper spot?
Skipper Smokehouse. That was fire.
Skipper Smokehouse. I don't know why. We had oysters and like wings and oh man, it was just, everything was delicious there. Oh man,
there was a couple notable spots. Lockhart, Texas, which is I guess known as like the barbecue capital of the U.S. We intentionally kind of went out of the way to go there. I just that brisket still lingers in my head. You know, the special thing about like Texas barbecue, they smoke with the trees that are only like grown there. So it's just a special kind of thing. Skipper's Smokehouse, we played at a venue. It was like a kind of semi outdoor venue / restaurant. And oh man, their food was just fire. In Florida, yeah, there was another in Gainesville. I won't go too far into that, man. I don't want to put anybody on blast. But let's just say, you know, we had a fear and loathing experience in Florida, and we ended up having wings, and it was a very good time, and they were very spicy.
A religious experience over some wings. Yeah.
I remember us eating like deep dish pizza in Chicago, like on the street, because we were like only there for a few hours. We're like, all right, let's get some deep dish, and we're eating it on the street, like in a box, right before we're about to play.
You're about to play, that's brutal.
Yeah. we were kind of like waddling around with our instruments after that.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
The Trouble in Paradise, I think is a pretty special record. What, in your guys' opinion, you know, what songs like still stand out to you that are songs that you're going to play no matter what from that record?
We don't really play too many songs off that record, honestly. We're writing so many songs now, and we're recording so many new tunes. We will occasionally try to dip into that, but I think we're just so in the habit and of just writing new songs.
Writing new stuff.
And now we have new stuff. Andre has a couple songs we're going to be pushing out with him. Ian's always writing. We're all always writing. Like I was mentioning earlier, we're like, there's five writers in this band. So it's always a little bit of that. Like, you know, we're about to release this vinyl, and Joe calls me like, you know, a couple weeks ago. He's like, hey man, it's time to start recording the new record. I was like, yes, let's do it. You know? So it's like, it's always that push for like, let's put out more music, you know, for our audience. But definitely one of the special songs for that on that record was, Life Is But a Dream. It was a song that I recorded in the old studio. I actually heard it on Goodfellas when they're getting married. They play that song in the background. And when I heard it, I was like, man, I really want to do this song. So I talked to Joe Kiana. I was like, hey, do this song. And we just set up a session. And that song's kind of been timeless. Like, we always get requests to do that song. And I see a lot of people sharing that song. But that's definitely one of the ones that stands out for me from that album, Your Life Is But a Dream. Life is but a dream. It's what you
make it. Always try to give. And one song was another song we still play from that album. It's called Leave Me. But anybody who's seen us, we play LA a lot. We are not the type of band that has the same set every show. It's like our repertoire is like so extensive. And, you know, we're still in communications with JQ as well. We probably will do some events. We want to do something where we're doing, like, you know, different albums, you know, different shows. But, yeah, we try to just kind of respect, like, whoever sang on something, you know, just we're not trying to recreate. We're just trying to remember, just carry this music and preserve it in its purest form. We're not reinventing the wheel at all. You know, so there's just no shortage of original music, covers we like to do. But I don't think we've ever played the same set twice, like ever.
I think we made a catalog a while back ago of all the songs we have done. And it was like a very fat list. I want to say it goes to like 80, 90, 100 songs maybe. And it's just all the songs we've ever done. And it's just like extensive list, a lot of covers, originals. Some of them were just like demo ideas, just things we kind of wrote on the spot. And then we've always kind of been the kind of group also, like, we hear a song, we're like, hey, let's do that song. Like, oh, let's do it this next show. You know what I mean? Like, oh, let's do it tonight. You know what I mean? That kind of vibe where we're trying to keep it interesting for ourselves as a band, you know, that we're not doing the same kind of set, and we're kind of keeping it interesting. You go to our show one day, you're not going to see the same set the next time you see us. So it's sort of that vibe when we're performing.
Yeah. So, you know, you guys were pretty active up into the pandemic, and it feels like you guys are now going to Europe this year, but you know, it was local shows. I didn't feel like it felt like it was a process to get kind of back on your feet a bit. Would you say that's the case?
120%, I would say that's the case. I'm sure Ian, you know what? So Crucial, myself and Ian, you know, we're in a lot of communication about how we run the band and stuff. And this is just the other side of the coin, you know, because I've talked to older members. It's hard when you're young. It's very easy, you know, to tour religiously and leave stuff behind. But COVID, something I talked to Vic Ruggiero about too. COVID, you know, like as a musician, sometimes you identify a lot of your accomplishments through like what you've done. You know, you identify yourself with that. And COVID was like a little freaky because you're kind of staring yourself in the mirror and, you know, there's no music, there's no shows. It's just you. And like, then you start to question, you know, what am I kind of beyond this? And, you know, a conversation Eric, Ian and myself had is, you know, it is lovely. It's like you're so rich through experience when you're touring, but at the same time, it's very hard to balance life. And LA is not one of the cheapest places to live. So we had a conversation about getting some, you know, good jobs for ourselves to kind of set ourselves up, you know, the thing. So we took some time to kind of invest in that. I got my Class A license. I was a trucker for a while, and then I was doing instructing. Ian, where'd you work during that time, or working?
I've been working at UPS. Went full time, I think, kind of around that time. So I was taking a lot of my time as well.
I mean, I play like in a lot of groups. I mean, 45s is one of my main bands for sure, and I've always like had to take jobs and then quit the jobs because the tour comes up. So I've bounced around a lot of jobs just to kind of continue the music path, you know, and I think it's always been a struggle, you know, bands getting older, people having babies, people getting married, career paths, you know, so it does make it a little more difficult kind of touring and performing and stuff. And that during that COVID era, I think that's what we just said, like, you know what, let's just record, let's get together, let's write songs, let's record stuff. And that's what you're hearing with this new record coming out. Mm-hmm. It's all the sessions and recordings that happened during that time era that we weren't able to perform. But yeah, like now we're trying to, like, now with this new record, we're definitely trying to get out there, go back to Europe, hit the US, hit Mexico. Mexico has a very strong fan base. I want to say almost maybe even bigger than Los Angeles for the art type of music, this type of Jamaican oldies. They have such a love for all that type of music, and there's a big audience for that. So we definitely want to go back there, Mexico City or Monterrey, and visit our fans out there, because they're big lovers of the sound. And Jackie's gonna go there. When are you going, Jackie? Right, you going in August?
August 24th. We're gonna have a show out there. I'm leaving the 22nd, but that was one of my first tours, Mexico. I toured Mexico before the U.S., which is wild, and I never even been on a plane. That was my first time flying. I was in my mid 20s or something, late 20s, and I was just so shocked by how big the scene is there, and how much love they have for the music. So anytime we go out there, it's such a treat, because they're gonna show up, and they're gonna show up proper, they're gonna be dressed up, they're gonna know the words to everything, and it's really cool to just see the passion that they have for the music, and it's one of my favorite.
Yeah.
Definitely one of the things that impressed us, that we're playing some Skylight tunes out there, and they were chanting along the horn line with us, as loud as we were playing. It was just the audience out there is unreal. They just know all the songs and all the lyrics, and there's also just a different language, but they know the lyrics to these songs, so that's always impressive about Mexico. So we'll be back, Mexico, we'll be back.
Oh yeah.
I've noticed too, in terms of LA stuff, it seems like every time Ska Mania announces a Jamaican artist, in the last few years, it's Steady 45s as the backing band. And it seems like any really good band that comes through, Tokyo Ska Paradise, it's Steady 45s opening. So it kind of feels like you've been doing some important stuff in LA, leading up to this part where you're heading the road again.
What's really cool about that, I'm really it's really kind of an honor. A lot of bands specifically request us, like even the Tokyo show, usually that goes to other kinds of bands, but because they vocalize some interest in having us.
So Tokyo Ska specifically said, can the Steady 45s open for us?
Yes.
Damn.
That's amazing.
Another band, Out of Control Army, I heard, was requesting for us to play with this show they have coming up in LA. Inspector,
California Honey Drops too.
Yeah, California Honey Drops, a great blues soul band. So there's just people who are fans of this music, I guess, appreciate kind of that fact. And when we play sometimes in Sky Mania, we don't usually do our own set for those. It's our focus is on that backing set. So we do our own shows, and then we'll do something special for Sky Mania, with that kind of situation. But it's definitely an honor. Yeah.
Isn't the just a total side tangent here? California Honey Drops, not a ska band. They don't play ska or reggae. Isn't their drummer from Expanders?
Exactly. Exactly. He wasn't. I think he played percussion with Expanders when they first started out. He has mad love for us, and they're also a group that's taken us under their wing. We've done a couple New Year's shows in the Berkeley area. We did an East Coast tour with them. Just another band that just, a little bit different styling, but the crowd was very receptive to us. And I think that's the cool thing about this music, that we can play this kind of music for any audience. We're doing a string of dates right now. And, in Reno right now, we have so many people coming up, and they're like, man, they don't even know what kind of music it is, but it just makes them happy. They just come up like, man, your music makes me so happy. It was my birthday, and I was celebrating my birthday here. And so it's a music that I feel like it just transcends to all styles and all, we can play a punk gig, we can play with a soul band, we can play pretty much in a lot of the markets, and the audience is pretty receptive. Very forgiving.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow @In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying Ska now more than ever.
Ska. You like ska, Aaron?
I've been curious about the genre, been wanting to get into it a little bit more. Any recommendations for me?
You should check out the Steady 45s. And while you're at it, you could hear more of this conversation that we had with the Steady 45s over on our Patreon. That's right. This conversation continues. The fun doesn't have to end. For only $5, you'll be supporting this podcast and you'll get so much exclusive content. It'll be coming at your eyeballs.
Wow, that is really a great offer. I think I'll have to check it out.
Oh, good. All right. Sounds like fun.
Sold, Adam Davis.
You're buying what I'm selling?
And I'm not Aaron Carnes in this conversation. I am you, the listener. I'm speaking on your behalf. You have just been convinced to sign up to the Patreon. You are actually pulling out your credit card right now. You're entering your name. You're entering your number. You are submitting your money. Money.
Make sure you put that expiration and the three silly numbers on the back of the card.
Oh, those numbers are so silly.